You're listening to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Christina Catcuti from Merlin Publishers. Welcome, Christina.
Hello.
So, can you tell us about the local landscape for books? How many books are sold, or, you know, are books popular still in Malta?
I would say our relationship with books is a bit particular. We, as a nation, we love to showcase our books. We put them in prominent places. We love to show them off when people come home. I wouldn't really call us a nation of readers as such. We love coffee table books, for example. Those are the kind of books that we like. But then I think the readers that there are would be really avid readers. They'd be a delight to talk to. They would know what's out at the moment, would recommend books. So I'd say that's a bit the local scene.
And are there lots of books being published in Malta?
Well, yes, at the moment, yes, I would say it's a growing industry. Books published in Maltese, of course, because the publishers in Malta tend to focus on that market, which fortunately is growing, because we need to have more books in our own language, of course.
Exactly. And what about books that are written in Maltese, potentially, you know, really good sellers? Do they then get translated into other languages for sale overseas, perhaps?
Well, we have had a few of our books, fiction books, as Merlin Publishers translated. For example, Pierre Mela's book,
yes.
Having Said Goodnight, which in Maltese was called Daklin Leila Halliktaid. The book won the EU Prize for Literature in 2014, 2 years ago, and we even had a book launch in Brussels, so some books do get translated.
So what's the most popular genre of book to be published here in Malta, in Maltese?
Well, I would say that's hard to tell. I would say the success of the book does not depend on the genre, but on the way it's written and how grippable it is, you know, if it hooks the readers, because then word of mouth starts spreading, and that's how a book sells, really. So I can't really point my finger at saying, look, that genre would really sell well or not. But if I may put in a word for budding authors, perhaps.
Please do.
I would say that the aim, when writing a book, the aim is to entertain the reader. It's not to really to show how clever or intellectual you are. I'm saying this because it's a problem that we find. Everyone sort of feels when writing in Maltese that they have to be the next James Joyce for Maltese literature. But the truth is that people out there, we need to get them to start loving reading in Maltese, and to do that, we need to give them books which are light and which are fun and which are entertaining, and not, you know, books which make you frown when you're reading.
Make it too difficult to understand.
Yes, and you feel bad about yourself then.
Absolutely. So how do you work with an author when somebody's sent in a manuscript? What does a publisher actually do in that sense?
Well, when you receive a manuscript, of course, we read it and then we discuss it between ourselves, and we decide whether we're going to take it on board or not. Once we decide that, yes, it is a good manuscript and it has a lot of potential, then we meet up with the author and we assign an editor and we start working on polishing the manuscript. Really and truly, we start working with the author the minute we accept the manuscript, because then we need to get to know a bit the character of the author, because that would influence our marketing. If an author is shy or if an author is very bubbly, then the marketing strategy would have to reflect the author's character as well as the book and the content of the book.
So would a typical campaign, I'm just thinking of things you see on TV really, they wheel them out to do book signings and you have posters and launches and readings, that sort of thing is typical?
Well, yes, we finalize the marketing plan when the book is at its final stages. The reason being is that with editing the book, the plotline might change. So we need to have the finished product before we really and truly plan the marketing. Then when there is the final edit, we sit down and we consider the potential elements that we can promote about the book. First of all, there is the cover. The book cover is very, very visual. It's very important and crucial. We say don't judge a book by its cover, but we do. Covers, I think, can make or break a book. You know, you see a book and the cover just calls out to you. You pick it up and you want to read it.
So does the author have any say in that, or is that something that between the publishing team, you've read the book, you've pulled out what you feel is the most salient point? Because obviously the author might be too close to the story and picks out something.
Yes.
That's
I don't know how other publishing houses work, but the way we do is we work as a team with the author. Of course, we have an expert designer, an in-house expert designer, so the input, our input is very heavy. But we do take on board the suggestions of the authors, because sometimes they come up with ideas which would reflect their book more than what we would have come up with. For example, we have a book called Grandma by Leanne Lull, and she told us that her favorite color is yellow. So Pierre, our designer, designed a book cover yellow and with spots, just how she liked it, and it really turned out well. Sometimes we do not always take up all the suggestions that the authors give us, because then we have to look at the saleability.
And I guess there are things like the colors and fonts and things that appeal to different audiences. So if it's
a book for women or children,
it has to be in specific things to be grabbed off. So what else do you do? So once you've sort of got the cover.
So once the cover is sorted and the book is finished, then we just sit down together, even with the author, and we plan the marketing strategy. Well, there are different ways how to market the product. There's social media these days, so we have to look at, you know, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Sometimes we put on teasers. You know, for people, we let them know. We let people know with little photos, you know, what's coming up.
Okay.
So just little teasers. Then there's the traditional media. So we have radio programs, television, and print newspapers. And there's schools, especially with children's books. So we prepare author visits, for example. And sometimes even these author visits are covered by the media, like the book I was talking about, Grandma's about anorexia. So we had a journalist follow the journey of school children when the author went to visit the school children to talk about anorexia. The journalist was covering the problems that school children actually come up with.
Okay.
And then we had a news article in the Times of Malta. Then, of course, we have the traditional book signing sessions. We organize it in bookshops, agenda bookshops, and we are not exactly a country where we queue with the book,
the signing.
And I think authors sometimes find that a bit difficult, but the thing is, we tend to do one book signing at the launch of the book, and then we stop at that. The reason being that it can be very disheartening for an author to go and sit in a bookshop and nobody comes up. It's not the way Maltese people buy books. We tend to be more reserved. We prefer to go, you know, to a shop, buy it quietly and not make a whole big fuss and hula. And also because it's so small that some way or other you're bound to know the author. So the author would be a cousin of the cousin and you'd still get the signature. And there's, of course, then the distribution in shops.
Mm-hmm.
So we make sure that our books are in shops and make it to the bestseller lists of the shops as well.
And what about the, I'm just thinking, because most of the books are written in Maltese, do you go out to the communities in Australia, you know, the UK, Canada, etc., where you have these Maltese communities, potentially could be a market for you as well?
At the moment, we haven't tapped into those markets, however, we have our own website, so we tend to promote our products, which, you know, and our shop on our website, and we do get people writing into us. They can order from these faraway continents.
And just in case anyone's listening from that far away, if there was a book written in Maltese in Australia, for example, they could actually contact you to potentially have it published here in Malta, or you look for Malta-based Maltese authors?
No, we don't look for Maltese. No, not at all.
Okay.
In fact, we are soon going to publish a book by an Australian writer for children.
Mm-hmm.
So that's coming up. But no, we are open
to good manuscripts.
Yes. In fact, we have recently published a book by Lizzie Eldridge. She's Scottish. The book is set in Glasgow, so it has nothing to do with Malta. But we're very open to books, to stories and authors who are, you know, from all over the world, really and truly.
Fantastic. So You say you help with the cover and the editing. Do you help put them forward? You said about bestseller lists. How does that happen? How do you get a book onto a bestseller list? Or is it purely because of the marketing, the book will, you know, sell more and more and more? Is it a slow burn? How long does it take?
Well, it depends on the kind of book. Some books are a slow burn. And then at the end of the year, you say, ooh, we didn't notice that it was doing so well. And others are just a hit immediately, especially if they're on the, you know, if the authors are on the media, and if it's, a very topical book, then it would start slowly rising in the bestseller list. And then, of course, the more people see it, it's a visual thing, the more people see it in the bestseller list, then it's a vicious cycle.
It's like you have to have read this book if your peers have.
Exactly.
So what genres generally sell best, not necessarily just from Merlin publishers? Are there genres that sell more, just teen fiction, or is it adult fiction, or is it these coffee table books that you've referred to that sort of sell the most in Malta?
I wouldn't have the statistics in hand, and of course, because at Merlin publishers we don't publish all sort of genres, so we wouldn't know. But many years ago, I used to work at a small bookshop in Valletta.
I hope it's still there.
No, it isn't. Oh. But it doesn't matter. I think it's really by location, and by the kind of bookshop. That, you know, the most popular books would be different according to the people who live in the area. For us as Merlin publishers, I think our bestsellers are the children's books, because we have quite revolutionized, I think, the way children's book, the stories. We have been very experimental. We have lovely illustrators who do a lovely job. I mean, sometimes the pictures just speak for themselves. And even our authors are very cutting edge. They're not scared to go over the line and, you know, experiment and challenge children.
Tell us a bit more about one of these books. Which one would be a current favorite?
Well, my favorite at the moment is Mingo.
Okay.
Which is, Mingo is a flamingo,
oh,
which has been shot by a hunter.
Oh.
So it's a lovely story written by Clara Zopardi and beautifully illustrated by Lisa Falzon. The story in itself was a bit of a risk for us, because we tackled something which is very topical and which is a bit controversial in Malta, hunting. It was a very daring, mm-hmm, I think. There aren't any other books about hunting, fiction books, let alone for children. But we didn't want to shy away from things which are topical, because that is what makes a publishing house fresh at the end of the day. So
Mingu is the one we should all go out and read, I think, actually, as adults as well.
Yes,
teach
that
us something.
That is the lovely thing about these books, that when they're good for adults as well.
I have a great collection of children's books, actually. I prefer those to most adult books. Mm. Adult books sometimes are a little bit dark, a little bit daunting. So.
Yeah, they don't really cheer you up sometimes.
So what other sort of books are Merlin publishing at the moment? Is there a sort of call? Do you have a preference, some stories you would like to sort of see happening, so that listeners potentially that have their book in them would be able to start drafting something and send it over to you?
We are very open to all sorts of manuscripts, as long as they are not academic, because that is not an area that we cover. But however, I would really like to encourage everyone out there who has a drawer, who has a manuscript in their drawer, because sometimes people are really, really shy to show their work. I come across that quite often. You know, people tell you, oh, no, you know, but I've written something, but it's not good, I'm sure. And then you find the opposite. Then some people, you know, they just want to go ahead and give anything. But really and truly, I think a proper author would have worked a lot at their job and sort of sweated and write. And when you write and rewrite and edit your own work, then that's bound to be a good piece of work.
You'd hope so, yes. Having been through it myself, I know it's actually quite painful and quite an emotional thing to actually hand over your book to somebody else.
It's a bit like giving birth in a way.
It's as terrifying, I imagine. But so once you've got them marketed out there, what about awards, local awards? Is that something that's attainable for local authors? Is there an award scene that bestsellers, yes, not just is, bestsellers, mm-hmm, national.
Yes, there is the National Book Award every mm-hmm. year, and of course our authors, we always submit our books for our authors to take part, and we've done well, very well, modestly speaking, at these awards. But I think this is good because I think as publishers, and I think all the publishers in Malta should really strive to break the language barrier. Many people out there are not comfortable with reading in Maltese. They prefer reading in English. It probably has to do something with our education background. Also, though, I think many of us have grown up with Maltese books, which tend to be a bit stiff and wooden, and they do not reflect the reality out there. So, you know, when you don't identify with a storyline, then it's very difficult to start reading in that language. However, I think, I mean, speaking for ourselves, we're trying to really modernize Maltese books. We have very young authors like Pierre Mela, Giuseppe Stagno, Mark Vella now, you know, and it's the way they write is, you know, sometimes I meet people and they tell me after they've read their books, they tell me, after the first couple of pages, I forgot that I was reading in Maltese. So that is what we really need. We need to dispel the myth that Maltese books are not just, yes, and they're not just, you know, they're just as fun as books in any other language.
Do you think the sort of surgence, for want of a better word, really want of a better word, of Maltese drama on TV is helping this genre of writers as well? You've had, you know, Strada, Stretta, and those types of series that are quite dark, quite cutting edge, more real life than the sort of happy ones, the happy soap operas. Do you think that kind of thing is influencing the interest in Maltese fiction?
Wow. Well, you caught me on the wrong foot. I don't really watch lots of television yet. No, I tend to think that it works the other way around. For example, when I think a few years ago there was they made a teleseries out of the Oliver Frigeri's book Itfali Jubil Vapuri, the book became a hit, so people started coming, you know, yes, exactly, people, the same thing with Rihisfel, our book by Pierre Mela, it was a teenage, it's targeted at teenagers, and when they made a series out of it, then the book started selling quite a bit. So it's the other way, I think. It's very difficult. Maltese people on the whole love their TV dramas, and I don't know, there's one every night, so people are just hooked onto that. But I don't think there is a direct link, as in, I don't think, yes, it makes authors go and sit down and write something. It's different. There's a difference between writing a script and writing a book, of course.
And do you, as the publisher, is part of the sort of marketing remit that you see a book come in and you see that would make good TV or that would make a good movie? Or is that down to a TV studio or a film studio that the writer would actually target them?
When it's a good book which would make a good script for a teleseries or something, then we are normally approached as publishers. We are approached and we are, you know, we get into talks to see whether it is possible or not to turn the book into something visual for television. That's the way it works.
So it works that way around, not that you would actually target the TV station yourself, it's actually the publisher, then off through the marketing activities, you'd hope a TV producer or something picks it up and sees.
Yes, then it's up to them. No, we don't do that. I mean, we work hard to market the book, not to market the television series, yes.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Christina Kedkuti from Merlin Publishers. Thank you. So how do you manage the expectations of an author who's sort of sweated blood and tears, maybe, over a book? How do you let them know that, yes, this is something that you want to work on, you want to take forward, or alternatively something Merlin may not want to take any further?
We usually get feedback whether we're going to take the book on board or not. So we do give feedback, and we do tell the author, look, this is not something which would really work for us, because we're not looking for this kind of thing at the moment. But sometimes we do go into details as well as to look what is wrong and what is potentially could be really, you know, could make the story better. So, I mean, we always give feedback to authors because we appreciate that it takes, you know, it takes some courage to send in a manuscript.
It does.
So we do acknowledge that.
I'm guessing this is something you also have to go through the process of, like we talked about, designing covers and getting sort of input and feedback, but also the editing process. Is that quite a traumatic thing to go through as a publisher?
At the moment, I'm editing a book. Before I came here, I was just editing a book, but I'm very lucky. Hopefully it will come out by October. It's in English, and I'm very lucky because the author is extremely cooperative, and I am a very, very harsh editor. So at the end of every chapter, I'd be like, I'm sorry, I had to do this. But editing is very, very important, and I think, and this is something which in Malta we still have to get used to. We always offer editing services, and actually they are, you know, you can't have a book out unless it's edited properly, professionally. Sometimes we do find resistance. There are authors who would not like to have even a comma changed, which I understand, because when you write a book, it's a bit like your baby, so you would just want it as it is. But when someone else sees it from the outside, and, you know, when you're editing a book, first of all, sometimes you spot things which would have gone
exactly,
unnoticed,
yeah.
Right? So you need that third person. And also, when we're reading a book, we have in mind the reader constantly, and what would sell, what would put him off, what would make the reader snooze halfway through the book, you know? So that is crucial. And I would really suggest for authors to be more open to editing. It makes the book more prestigious when it's out.
And is it just a sort of editing? Is it a case of correcting the language, making it absolutely perfect? Or is there an element of making sure, you know, the characters are correct all the way through, or the plot is correct all the way through? What does an editor
It's a mix of everything. First of all, you have to see that, for example, every character sticks to its voice all throughout. So you can't have someone speaking in Cockney at the beginning of the book and then in, you know, RP by the end. So you have to stick to that. There's also little details, like the character. It's not just the conversation, but even the character. At the moment, I'm editing a book, and this woman, and we discuss things into, you know, would she wear a tight skirt or would she wear a wrapped dress, you know, these
so you
kind
really
of things.
To know the characters.
Yes,
the
exactly.
Editor as well.
Completely. You need to know the characters, and you also need to try and start thinking. You know, you put yourself in the shoes of the character, and you just have to make sure that what the author is saying about the character tallies with what he wants, with what he wants to do. It's not an easy process, and like I said, it's not easy for the author to receive feedback, there'd be quite a few changes.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the product is much better
still
with
does.
Editing,
yeah.
And it is still the work of the author, because an editor is nothing without the author. So, you know.
So do you find yourself, when you're actually reading books for pleasure, do you find yourself still editing and still thinking, oh no, I would have done the cover this way, or I would have marked
all the time. All the time. That's why I'm in this job. Chris wrote me in because I do that all the time.
So what are the sort of books that you read for pleasure? What types of things? Have you got a couple of favourite books that we can...
Well, at the moment I'm reading the Churchill book by Boris Johnson. I'm trying to understand, yeah, like his, you know, his Brexit stand, where it comes from. But I love Boris Johnson. I'm also rereading Like Water for Chocolate by Laura Esquivel, because I'm doing some research for an upcoming project. However, my all-time favorite book at the moment is by a French author, Antoine Laurent. It's called The Red Notebook, and it's a fascinating piece of fiction. It's set in Paris. It's about this man who finds a handbag of a woman, and he tries to trace the owner. But it's very funny because he gets into the bag, and I'm always fascinated. I mean, I look at my bag, which is like a Mary Poppins bag, and you find all sorts of things. There. Yes, exactly. So this guy is fascinated by all the things that he finds in this bag, and the bag sort of takes a life of its own.
So is influencing what actually goes into your handbag now? Do you think, oh, no, the red notebook, I must have the red notebook in my bag at all times in case a random stranger finds my bag and discovers
me. I do have a pink one.
Well, it's been really fun talking to you. That's Christina Kekuta from Merlin Publishers on this week's What's the Story. Join us next week when we talk to Jane Timmons, who's the author of Pim Pam and the Gods of Cantrelli.